All right, Cole. What are you doing this time?
Well, Gary, I recently acquired an antique stock ticker.
Ooh, I love those things.
I know, right? They're like under the little glass, the glass bulb. Prints out just like a tiny ribbon of stuff. I'm a huge fan. Back when industrial design meant something.
Yeah. I've always wanted one of those, but then it's like, this is stock market.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Like the iconography of it is bad, but the gadgetry is good.
Yes. Yeah. I just, there's probably other machinery from that era that evokes the same vibe that is not associated with something that I find abhorrent, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Like a stapler.
Yeah. but I've, taken a couple of risks here, bought a bunch of stocks on margin, just a smattering or so. And we're going to pull back the symbols of the stocks that have grown. And we're going to see if that spells anything. Okay.
That sounds great. The stock market is truly random.
It really is. It's made up. It's fake.
Hi.
Yeah. It doesn't actually correspond to anything. It's not the health of the economy. So let's see here. Going to look at this. So F, that's Fraser Incorporated, the company that republishes Fraser DVDs. O, Orville Redenbacher popcorn. R. This is going to be a lot. What's a fun company for R?
Reebok.
Yeah. Reeboks.
Reebok. Home kids are always playing shoes.
Yeah. No, Reebok. All day I dream about Reebok. Yes. Okay. So we're really backing up here. The room's kind of filling here. It's an arm. Okay. Spells Forbes Corporate Warrior.
Isn't it weird how Reebok sounds like a robot overlord?
It does.
Like, all hail Reebok.
I mean, do they still make Reeboks? Are Reeboks still a thing?
I think so.
Oh.
They might have moved on to Reeboks at this point. You have to do it again.
Oh, Bach. Man.
Tubach. And then do Bach again. Did you hear the one about the repetitive chicken? He was wearing Reeboks.
Is that an actual joke? Is that you heard somewhere, or did you just make that up?
No, I just pulled that out of nothing.
Nice. Good. I like it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And welcome to After Suffering, a podcast where one host really needs to watch the glorious film Willow.
Yeah, you wrote that one. That's you, isn't it?
No, it's a guy with a dog avatar.
Okay. Well, good for him.
It's James Dosmos.
Dosmos. I was about to say, hope the dog's good, but there's no such thing as a dog that isn't good.
A dog wearing a business suit.
Uh-oh, business monster. Uh-oh.
But Dosmos is still playing Goat Simulator.
Oh.
It's wild.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, they might have added new stuff. Anyway.
I'm sure they did.
This is a Gary, this is a Gary joint. You brought Forbes Corporate Warrior, and I hate it.
It's an emergency, though.
It is an emergency.
Like, it's amazing. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really incredible.
It's funny because I want to say that it couldn't be funnier if they tried to make it funny. The fact that this is straight laced, it makes it far more amusing to me. But then I wonder, they had to have known, right?
I don't think so. 1997?
Yeah.
This is pretty irony, man. Like this was serious. This was to get, reviewers called this, Crane's New York Business Magazine called it Doom Meets Wharton School of Business.
God damn it.
And it actually, talks the talk in terms of like economics 101 bullshit,
I love this. This is Battlezone. But what if every button that you pressed and every single thing in the entire game, like, wasn't so much like a metaphor, because like game as metaphor is a real thing, and that's like a it's really neat when that is explored. It's literally just like relabel things. So like instead of bullets, you have cash. You know,
yes.
And instead of health, you have your stock price, but also your earnings.
it's a more earnest, less self-aware, and even I would admit more poorly executed version of a big criticism I have with Undertale with the XP twist.
Yeah.
Where they're just like, no, this is this. Mm-hmm. It functions exactly the same, but we're calling it something different.
Right.
Which is what that is, that game's trick to me. this is that, but writ large and calling it vile stuff.
Yeah. So I've got the manual open here, and I'm just looking at the list of commands. You know, it's it's the keyboard commands. You've got move, fire, weapon, choose weapon, but then you get down to increase thrifty orientation, increase lucky orientation, sell stock and equity, buy back stock and equity, increase debt, scan competitor, and
like answer video phone.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's the good stuff. And it really undersells it. You turn your shield on and off, but your shield is the PAC shield, the Political Action Committee shield.
That is so fucking gross. Because it's grim. Okay, so you've got the shield, which is your PAC shield, but also the walls in the game represent government regulation.
Yes,
you know, these are barriers to free trade, like government regulation.
This game is so libertarian, it comes with a pacifier. Like, this is some grim shit.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And like, I can't stress to you what a nothing this game is. Like, it is more boring than Battlezone, which is a fucking feat.
Yeah, you go into what can only be described, the gameplay of this is that you to a virtual zone. Inside the virtual zone, you fight polygons, and we'll do the rogues gallery because the manual has what they represent, and it's real good. And you just shoot them while monitoring an absolutely bewildering number of meters. They're on, like, the UI for this is such a nightmare.
It looks like a flight simulator. It looks like Falcon 4.0.
except it's just an arena shooter without obstacles. Like, what if you were in you're playing Faceball 3D, but not in a maze, just on a big flat plane.
Yeah.
You know? And the reason why this is at all just not that is because it comes with five, you know, pretty small type pages of epistolary fiction to set up the virtual reality helmet that allows you to do business in the zone.
Yes.
Here from Dr. Carolyn Hart to the prospective corporate warrior.
Gosh, the fact that this has nothing to do with Forbes, like just either that fucking little gremlin Steve Forbes or his goddamn useless parasite of the company. It's a god damn it, I hate it so much.
Once you put on the DSMI helmet, you'll become a corporate warrior. In this world, cash is ammunition, and the amount of cash is your health. These are all things that Tim Heidecker said during Lucky season number 7 of On Cinema.
Yep.
Like, this is a Tim Heidecker approach to business.
I mean, just like when they're in the metaphor and stuff, it literally feels like, and the bones are the money and so are the worms.
it's exactly that. And there's so much like great bland tech speak. You know, in this, as she kind of explains her creating this helmet that allows like the libertarian wet dream that is entry number one in this is fucking awful.
Let me give you a little taste of the prose here. Okay. Yeah. So it opens up talking about like, oh, back in the days, you know, we talked about, you know, just how different things were worth a different amount of money. It's the discipline of economics examines the world in which limitless needs and finite resources get rationed by a concept called, quote, price.
What would happen if the needs could be met exponentially faster speeds? What if the world were illuminated by access to perfect information? One, there'd be an end to hunger.
No, they're fucking wouldn't.
Real quickly.
Yeah, no, they're fucking wouldn't. We have that. Yeah. And people are still fucking hungry. What you're talking about are not solutions to this problem. It would be an...
No poverty or unemployment. Hyper-competitive markets for goods would guarantee the lowest prices. Workers were an efficient market rate wages and could be easily warned of job obsolescence.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck off.
There was one like, you know, what if a whole army of workers could be roused in the middle of the night to go forward, you know, and it gets
suck.
Yeah, it would be terrible. But also like this plan doesn't make any sense because they're talking about like, yes. So, you know, to navigate this perfect information, we need to make this helmet where a human person with human reflexes kind of like just like makes decisions and shoots, you know, just. Mm-hmm. You know, and shoots things in order to make it happen. No, humans have terrible reflexes. There's a whole book about like the struggle to move computers like one rack closer to Wall Street on the in the database because mm-hmm. you needed to have that like microsecond of like lower lag in order to go. It's called Flash Boys. It's really good. But like this is just crazy. Need at least 5 hours uninterrupted concentration to map out optical and oral stimulus market interface. OAS. SMI? Need a better acronym.
There's a genuine like effort that is put into this thing too, because there's a lot of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
Entry 2.0. Snuck over to the food station for coffee. Feel like a fugitive. Started to memorize the faces of the people I see when I leave home. Carl at the food station wished me a happy birthday. I'd forgotten all about it. I'd like to blame this lapse on stress, but come to think of it, I forgot my birthday last year too.
Yeah.
This is the kind of prose you find in a really shitty Shadowrun novel.
Yup.
It's got huge like adapting a video game energy to the prose.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. But like this is just kind of hinting at this corporate entry that does not exist in the actual product itself, because she's making this thing that is going to like, you know, basically start an arms race. But there are also like information trader cartels that are trying to get a hold of it. And there's other versions of this that exist.
But the game takes place after she succeeded.
Yes.
And when just business is just done by putting on a helmet, going into a zone and shooting your competitors with money.
Yeah. So sometimes you shoot them with money. You spend the money to buy different weapons that affect different meters on their side. So you're not shooting them with a missile. You're firing a marketing campaign to make their goods seem more basic and economical.
Yeah. Forbes Corporate Warrior takes place in a futuristic, cutthroat, capitalistic, electronic world where all business transactions are conducted in one giant virtual arena. There are no borders, no countries, just three rules. Supply what your customers demand. Elevate the stock price. Constantly replenish your cash stream. Failure to perform any of the categories will result in a fatally early retirement plan.
If you die in the market, you die in real life.
What, you go broke in real life.
What the fuck are you talking about?
It's very confusing, this whole thing.
Well, also, so
they explain your horrible interface here. Okay, go ahead.
No, I just before we move on, like that text, that it's a futuristic, cutthroat, capitalistic, electronic world, you know, with no borders, no countries, just three rules. For the life of you, Gary, can you decide if they think what they are describing is a good thing? Like when somebody is describing their utopia and it is completely undistinguishable from a dystopia, it's fucking grim, right?
It is. This is what people with bad political beliefs want.
Mm-hmm.
I think I think that they think this is good.
Okay.
Because they would have solve poverty and stuff like that. Like people who get incredibly horny for markets.
Mm-hmm.
This is the game for them if they like bad first person shooters as well.
Oh my gosh.
So we get then to just some kind of like economics 101 stuff.
Yeah.
About meeting customer demand and stuff. Dodging fire, our UI where we can answer, press space to answer the video phone, and get cash. And then we get this helpful hint section, which is very funny. It includes set the monitor to 256 colors to improve the game speed.
Yep.
Doesn't feel like it should be my job.
No. Kind of seems like it should
to optimize this.
Should have shipped something stable. Yeah.
And then the competition, which are these Tron like, you know, like ICE in Shadowrun terms.
Uh-huh.
That are described, all of their weapon ranges are described in golf club terms.
It's so grim.
It's very grim. And just in the off chance this ever reached someone who didn't know golf, like me, it doesn't make any sense. Like the carpetbaggers, who are nothing to write home about, not exactly rolling in money, have a good range, about a one iron. The undercutters, who are wanderers who sell at cutthroat prices, are about a five iron. I don't know what that means. I don't play very much golf.
I mean,
I play a lot of video games, and I still don't really know. I just choose the club that's best, but I don't pay attention to it. I just flip through.
Yeah, yeah. No, I just like the higher the number on a golf club, the more the loft and the shorter the range.
There we go.
Okay.
Yeah. I like that you fight miniature Pizza Huts that are called conglomerados. What are conglomerados?
Yeah. But like, it's funny because like the shapes of these, they're just abstract. It's like, it kind of looks like they're 3D versions of the logos for these companies.
Except for the Nifty Thrifties, which is a T with eyeballs. Like, we're the Nifty Thrifties.
Yeah. They're the Martini Men. They're the Spikers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and what's great about this, or again, just the assumption that is built into it, is that, like, you know, they say, oh, it doesn't matter what these companies make. It doesn't matter what you make. You could be making, you know,
you make plastic. Everything.
Yeah, you make whatever the customer wants, and it's like this is just literally embracing the full financialization of the market. It doesn't actually matter like what products there are. What you make is money. It doesn't matter what you make as long as you make money.
It's like the episode of It's Always Sunny where Frank Reynolds goes back to work and Charlie and Mac are constantly asking what he makes. And he's like, we don't make anything.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, we make money. And he just ends up selling the company and screwing a bunch of people over because they're the worst people on earth.
Of course.
Who do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Who buy into this. I was going to mention, so the developer of this, Byron Press, a Price Multimedia Company, has a real rogues gallery of stuff that they've done. Including a game called They Call Me the Skull / The Suit, which I'm very curious about that.
I mean, it's probably just about some business douche, right? Like, oh, this is mergers and acquisitions, murders and executions.
It's a virtual comic book thing from VR Soft Action. They Call Me the Skull is one of the comics, and The Suit is another comic.
In the North Putnam Maximum Security Correction Facility, strange things have been going on. Rumors of... Okay, this actually sounds kind of cool.
It might be good.
it might be good. I don't know. No, the art is bullshit.
I assume not.
I mean,
looking at the screenshots makes it look pretty rough.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, super pixelated. I have no idea what this is. It's like a shoot 'em up. Like, it's literally like a top-down, you just shoot icons on the screen. Okay. Yeah, bad. Dumb.
They also made a game based on Bruce Colville's My Teacher is an Alien series, which is wild. I read the shit out of them books.
I've only ever seen, I know the cover where like she's standing up at the front and like the face is pulled off like a Mission Impossible mask, and it's like a green alien with the big red eyes. Is that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. I've never read those, but I know what they're aware of. Yeah.
Yeah. They're fun.
Yeah.
They're real good. They got a bunch of comic book license. It's wild to think in 1996, this company had Marvel Comics, Spider-Man, The Sinister Six.
Huh.
That's fucking wild. Like, just give this to the, you know, the lowest rent thing we can think of.
But like comic book games were not just like, yeah, that's what it was.
Huh. Yeah. It's just very different than now. That's what I'm marveling at.
Some of these screenshots of the Marvel Comics Spider-Man Sinister Six are real memeable. The one where Spider-Man's taking the mask off and he looks all refreshed.
Yeah. that feeling when.
this, like, it looks like an adventure game. There's just a straight up Picross puzzle here.
Well, there's also parts where it's over top and it looks like action.
Yeah.
Like it seems like. So, I mean, I imagine this is horrible.
Oh, yeah.
But I also can imagine doing every one of these at some point on this show, because I feel like we've discovered a developer goldmine.
Yeah.
Here between these wacky guys that were hired by Forbes.
Huh. And the publisher in this also did Westworld 2000. I mean, this is just a whole, like, we've gotten into the valley of the games that are also CD-ROM multimedia experiences.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sicko mode.
Yes.
Oh gosh.
Oh, shit.
They did Gayhan Wilson's The Ultimate Haunted House. Which
Gayhan Wilson's Ultimate Haunted House?
Who is Gayhan Wilson?
I know. Is just his hand gay?
No, not gay.
Like, we all experimented a little bit, but I wouldn't say that just my hand is gay.
No, it's not gay hand. It is G-A-H-A-N. Who is?
Oh, gay hand.
Yes, is an American illustrator. Passed away in 2019. And he looks like Peter Stormare will look like in 30 years.
The this publisher is Simon & Schuster Interactive.
No.
They also had the Star Trek license for a really long time. They have very confusingly in games like Happy Birthday Maisie. I don't know who Maisie is. It's very specific.
Maisie the Mouse, I think, is a children's show.
It is a mouse.
Yeah, that's a kid's show.
Oh man, I have my next vanity pick for this show though. which is Eminem's Blast for the Game Boy Advance, which the cover shows the Eminems having a party while the green Eminem seduces them and the red one tries to get the green one to make a move.
Oh no.
While the blue one plays saxophone.
Yay. It is everybody do your class. Everybody just do your thing.
Yeah. This is D&D party we have here. So look forward to that in a few weeks. Eminem Blast.
Oh God. And Simon & Schuster did the Outlaw Golf series, the Outlaw Golf and Outlaw Volleyball.
I'm amazed that there is a Wikipedia entry
for Forbes Carpet Warrior.
And a really huge, for Byron C. Price, who is the guy who did these publications.
Yeah. Yeah.
This guy has got a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
The Ultimate Witch, Time Machine 9, Fiction Illustrated.
a whole Fiction Illustrated.
Yeah, just in general.
Oh my gosh, yeah. It's just a publisher, but he published the Dragon World illustrated novels for children's. Ooh, New Year's Best Graphic Novels and Manga, 2005.
the publisher also made a game called Panty Raider From Here to Immaturity.
I saw that.
Which, yeah, the song...
What?
Good Lord. There's a song for the trailer, like.
Huh.
Somewhere in the galaxy, a zillion miles away, a catalog full of underwear and chicks showed up one day. Three aliens put the catalog through abnormal wear and tear, and it didn't take long till they needed more shots of girls in underwear.
It's a real weird song. It sounds like a song they like the shit kicking country songs up for StarCraft 2, except for bad and about panty raiding aliens.
Oh, it's about aliens.
Panty raid?
Yes. Do they have opinions about the relative ease of Earth girls?
I assume they do.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do. Where are they now? Segment.
If history holds, I like the blandness of Robot City.
Yeah, everything is efficient. I am a city who is also a robot. Oh man, this shit is wild, and I hate business.
Oh yeah,
very much. So I assume that we get something out of this, because I think that, like, somebody, I think it was somebody on Twitter, I can't remember, just posted like business school in quotes and lol, and it is a very funny idea.
It is.
It sounds like Buster saying he's going to go to army. You know, going to school for just business. Just general.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? No, I have nothing but disdain for it. And that started kind of early. So like, I liked learning about it because I like learning about everything. And I got, you know, like a lot of people, I got fucked over by the, I graduated into the market that the 2008 financial collapse, created. Right. So I wanted to understand the nature of the monster, what delayed my life by a couple of years. And so I learned about that stuff, but like, my skepticism, I mean, it kind of began, it was like Econ 101. It was honors Econ 101. And then we had a professor, I forget his name, but he was a walking ad for, he was a walking ad for heart, for blood pressure medication. Okay.
Okay.
Just a old man, not heavy, but thick. Tight cropped hair, bald, you know, very orderly beard, very angry. He was a lawyer, but he taught economics because he liked shaping young minds, and he was ridiculously libertarian, not like social libertarian, like, you know, just like, oh, people should be able to smoke weed or whatever, you know, not civil the libertarian where it makes sense, you know, like one of the bad kinds of libertarian. Right. Yeah. And, you know, so he's obviously he's teaching microecon, which is just, you know, like, oh, everything works in a vacuum. Right. You know, and it can be as simple as possible. We can justify that these elemental forces should be unimpeded. Right. And, you know, he did this thing. Anytime we talked about the supply and demand curve, he would take his arms and he would cross his forearms in front of him. Almost like it was like a superhero pose or whatever in front of him. And he would say, and what what determines this? And every time he said supply and demand, he did this gesture in front of him, showing the crossing lines of supply and demand. Like it was a fucking religious ritual.
And all hail Minoku kind of thing.
Yeah, pretty much exactly.
Hail Reebok.
All hail Reebok, the great mechanical master. I had that, and it just like I just got fucking disgusted because he would go off on these tirades, and it's like this is supposed to be like the honors class, like this is supposed to be like serious or whatever.
Yeah. My earliest exposure to thinking about that consciously was a very close friend I had who I've grown apart from for like many reasons. Worked at Walmart, not because he was like, you know, supported it, because small town, had to work somewhere.
Yeah.
And he would talk about government regulation.
Oh God.
And he would talk about it, and he would talk about it how you know, he hated working there, but he still kind of defended it.
Oh God.
Because he was saying that all this regulation feels like, quote unquote, let's find the best businessman and punch him or punish him. And even at the time I was like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. You know, like, let's get some guys together.
And it reminded me, cause you run into this stuff. It was patently obvious with Trump, obviously, but people would be like, well, you know, you got to respect. He's a good businessman.
No, you
taking
don't.
Aside the question, well, let's put aside
whether it's actually true. Yeah.
Yeah. Whether it's true. I by no means have to respect that.
No, I don't.
That is not a skill set that I respect from anyone.
Nope.
You know, it's not inherently respectable. Like I have an iPhone and I'm fine with it. I do not respect a company's movements on that front and how successful they are at monetizing evil.
Yeah.
And enlisting me into this thing. It is not worthy of my respect.
Nope.
There's too much evil attached to it. And even if there wasn't too much evil attached to it, like if people weren't, you know, mining for rare minerals that are used in my phone. If that were not true, I just don't respect the skill set.
No.
I don't have to respect everything that somebody is good at because they're good at it.
Yeah. You know, and every argument that I've heard counter to that, you know, just it feels like great man worship, right? You know, we're just like, oh, you know, if that person wasn't allowed to do what they do, then, you know, those people wouldn't be able to eat. Right. And I was like, well, no, we would just find another way to feed those people.
like all the many ways we're not doing it now.
Yeah. Lots of ways to do it, you know.
Yeah.
And
also, let's give it a shot.
Why not?
Maybe that might happen. You seem real confident about it.
Yeah.
I disagree. I don't think that would happen. But just humor me. Let's try not doing it.
And also, just humor me. Pretend for a moment, you know, get rid of your assumption that one day you will be like him, you know, and understand that you are you in your circumstances. And that means you have nothing in common with him. Right. So
conservatives love a hierarchy.
Oh yeah.
Like they want
it. It's the thing about them.
And same thing with, you know, the what is it? The Disco Elysium. you know, oh, God is in his heaven, everything is in its rightful place on earth.
Oh, yeah, no, centrist. I mean, just like the liberals, right? Took me a while to come around to, like, accepting the idea that liberal, as a person on the left, that liberal could be something that I could be a concept that I could be disdainful of, right? Mm-hmm. But as I've gotten, as I have become the fucking worst, no, I'm around to it, no. Yeah, just you have to be able to imagine an end to the way things work easier than you can imagine the end of the world, especially imagining either of them as acceptable, you know?
Yeah.
And
in a general sense, I do not like things that rank and categorize people.
Nope.
I think those things are bad.
Yes.
I do not like being categorized. I do not like being ranked. Mm-hmm. I don't like the idea that everyone just has a position and a role to play that is a hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
I reject.
Yeah.
You know, that is a baked in thing that is simply true does not work on me.
Mm-hmm.
And there is very little evidence for it other than just that's the way it's been.
Yeah, it's just the way it's always been. Like, there has to be someone. Oh, so you want everybody to be on the same playing field, right? Oh, you just want, like, total chaos, everybody doing their own thing. It's like, no, but, like,
they're it's not the same idea.
it's not the same
power thing. Does not equal chaos.
Yeah, like anarchy does not equal chaos. It's not that is not what that means. And I mistook those things. In the past, and I've learned a little bit more about it, and like, no, fuck you. It doesn't, we don't have to have the stack. We don't have to have the pyramid, right? There's a great,
it reminds me of feminism, where it's like anyone who is against feminism is either a shit or doesn't know what it means.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because the number of people who don't actually know what anarchy means or what have you, regardless mm-hmm. of whether they ascribe to it, right? Like, I'm not saying that's necessarily the way, mm-hmm. but the misunderstanding about what that actually means is huge. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of hatred and rejection that is born out of just ignorance.
Yeah. You know, and that is by and large a result of really concentrated efforts to keep the definition of that as, you know, somebody who wears a black hoodie and throws Molotovs everywhere. Yeah. Oh, it's scary. They're kind of, they're going to come and burn your house down. Like, no, not how that works.
Amazing that Derek came over and visited me and we had a nice time when the streets of Portland are filled with roving gangs of black masked Molotov cocktail throwers. I can't believe we made it out alive.
Yeah.
Because the city is overrun.
Yeah. just Andy Ngo crucified at Pioneer Square. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really a shame. Believed. There's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah. So. No, there's a good something that helped clarify this for me. There's the Innuendo Studios, great YouTube channel, but a great video called "There's Always a Bigger Fish." I think is a good primer on that. That helped help me put words and images to something that I had felt for a while, which is unjustified hierarchies are bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
Hierarchy must be necessary to exist.
Mm-hmm, baby. Yeah. And this whole thing where, yes, there are no borders. Cash is ammunition. And it's like, I don't know, man.
It's depressing.
It's really, like, depressing.
It's real bleak.
Yep.
I mean, it's from 1997, so it's some of its teeth mm-hmm. are gone. Like, this wouldn't come out now.
Right,
you know,
right.
This would be a flashpoint in a culture war if somebody tried to release this now.
Yeah,
and there'd be enough discourse to, like, move a mountain.
Yeah, and what's funny about it is, like, that version of the hellhole that they're describing as a utopia, that also is, like, out of favor as well. You know, the idea that mm-hmm. Yes, there are no borders, there are no countries, there is nothing. You know, there is just cash. Like, that's not even a fashion on the right now. Like, what they want is, you know, just like pure, like, the protectionism, right?
Yeah.
So like that, like, this would come out and it would be seen as, you know, even by people that it otherwise would have appealed to in a different moment, it would be seen as, like, the subversive. I don't know, just gross and bad. Even people I hate would hate this, which is weird.
Yeah, no, nobody likes this. It'd bring us together, honestly.
Yeah. You know? All of us can throw rocks at the libertarian. At the financial libertarian. But I had another thing, and this is something that I tell my family when they say, like, oh, college is always this indoctrination, you know, just like, oh, you changed when you went to college and you came back, you know, more. It's like, no, I've kind of always been left. I've always been left of you guys. I just didn't talk about it that much. Had a media law class, okay?
Okay.
And they had a guest professor who was an anchor, like a local news anchor. Okay. And it wasn't a very good class. He was not a good teacher. Nice enough guy. But like at one point, you know, he was talking about, again, regulations or whatever. And he went into this thing. He said, you know, a lot of college students are Democrats. You should really look at libertarianism, though, because a lot of what you're saying is basically the same thing. You know, it might be a way to go. It's just what he said to a bunch of kids in a class.
Yeah, just consider it, because you're not making a choice, but that aligns with your morals.
Mm-hmm.
You're choosing options off a menu.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, for this, I wish my college experience radicalized me. Like exactly. It was so bland and worthless.
Uh huh. Like,
I know that I pick up from context clues that my college experience was unusually bland and worthless.
Mm-hmm.
There was no radicalization happening.
No.
It was a bunch of teachers who couldn't care less,
mm-hmm.
Getting a paycheck.
Yeah.
And me getting a degree. And it was a disgusting farce where we both pretended what mm-hmm. we were doing had a meeting.
Yeah. But both of us.
If I could take it back, I would.
Right. It just all of that money and all of that time and all of that worry about making a grade.
Not worth it.
Yeah.
Even remotely.
The most radical thing that I heard was in a film editing class professor I really liked, but it just, he said, fuck Fox News, you know,
yeah.
It was just in a discussion about that was the wildest thing. And what might, you know, what people who talk about college, you know, being the pinko factory, it is what they're getting at is just like, oh, you go to a bigger place and you meet different kinds of people. And generally you emerge from that, you know, being okay. Yeah. Being okay with different kinds of people, and that is anathema, especially to a small town existence, right?
Yeah. Bigotry typically has a hard time surviving meeting people.
Yep.
You know, because you meet people and they're like, you know what, this trans person's awesome. Maybe they're mm-hmm. not all like that.
Yeah.
You know, and then only some people go on to the next level where it's like, yeah, maybe this trans person's kind of a jerk.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, people are just people.
Yeah.
You know? like, all the classes have goods and bads, mm-hmm. you know, people who are good and not so good.
Yeah.
yeah. Fucking A. Yeah. One of the things I did like about this is it reminded me of Shadowrun Matrix.
Yeah, it did.
Like it made me think if they took all of this stuff and just changed all of the, what it's saying it's about and was just like, you're in the Matrix doing a run.
Yeah.
You know, I would be way more friendly about it, but they just slap the worst possible theme on it.
I mean, it does remind me in a lot of ways. I mean, not just aesthetically, like I love this Lawnmower Man VR kind mm-hmm. of thing, but it does remind me of like the mechanics in like the Genesis Shadowrun in particular, where it is more of an RPG kind of deal when you're in there. It turns into that kind of game where you're like, oh, this is just a different kind of weapon, but we're going to give it a different name. You know, so you've got, you know, like, oh, price weapons, but instead of a machine gun, you have a price slicer and a price bomb. And all of that.
Yeah.
Again, just that kind of very shallow metaphor. In a way, it reminds me of Frog Fractions, actually.
Oh, you know? Sure.
We're just like, oh, the illusion of this being an educational game is just we're occasionally going to put a fraction on screen. Like, this is a business game. In a world where actual business sims exist and are fun, we're going to make this a business game by having a stock ticker at the bottom instead of a health bar.
I hate it. I hate it, but it was an abject suffering emergency.
Yes,
I think by any means, mm-hmm. any argument. So,
yeah.
Do we have anything else on this?
No.
Bad boy? There's not a whole lot of internet stuff about it.
Yeah, fuck business monsters. I expected there to be more to this,
mm-hmm.
but no, it was people reacting on YouTube the way that you would expect them to, and there is one review that is pretty on point. that has a funny headline, a 1000 aspirin game, that is an allusion to the different difficulty levels. One of them is a 1000 aspirin job, you know, alluding to,
yeah, I love a 1000 aspirin job.
It's difficult business times. You have to have 1000 aspirins.
Yeah. I think it's pretty obscure, and that's maybe part of why there's not more stuff about it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Shout out to somebody in the Abject Suffering channel who surfaced this to me. I cannot remember who.
Oh yeah.
Somebody just found it and posted it, and I was like, yep.
Let me see if somebody there put it into the randomization dingus, because it seems like something that it might be the same person. But yeah, I don't have anything else to say about this besides fuck business monsters. Is my go-to.
And before somebody's like, how interesting, you guys run a business.
Yeah, we're a small business and we own it ourselves.
There's a real difference between it doesn't matter what we sell. Mm-hmm. We're just shooting value bullets at price customers.
Yeah.
Essentially, learn
the distinction between work and a job. Work is good.
Yeah.
job is bad.
Exactly. Yeah. Critical thinking failure on your part.
Yeah.
Same thing when we were talking bad about advertisement and somebody like legitimately, you know, interesting. You guys run an advertisement for yourself at the beginning of every episode. How is that different?
Because it's obvious ways. Yeah. In many obvious ways. It's us directly asking you for something, you know, it's not us half-heartedly selling somebody else's thing to make them money, selling your attention, in order to make somebody else rich. No. That's not the thing. It is us taking a moment of our time to explain where this comes from and how this whole arrangement works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No thanks.
Angry. Nobody put this in the randomizer. So
good. I'm going to go do some furious push-ups.
Yes.
I'm actually going to go eat some furious Doritos.
Are those just extra spicy Doritos?
No, they're just regular Doritos. I'm mad at them. They've been trapped for a long time. So I rescued them from a cave.
Oh, that was really that was altruistic of you. Thanks for bringing this to my attention. I fucking hate it.
Hell yes. Enjoy. We will see you next time, everybody. Mm-hmm. Rate, review us, and go to our Patreon, patreon.com/duckfeedtv. It's an ad.
It's an ad. Oh, no. And yet you live in society.
And yet we live in a society. Mm-hmm. What should they do until next time, Cole?
Just go and shout a swear at a business monster.